Hey, let's chat with Grace here. We have episode 3 of our podcast, and my investor today is McKellar Newsom. McKellar, we've known each other for quite a while.
It's been a long time.
It's been very interesting. McKellar originally lived in Montana.
It's true.
And she was investing here as kind of a way to diversify her portfolio of investments out of Montana into Chattanooga. That was about 11, 12 years ago.
It was actually December of 2008.
Oh, wow.
So 2 months after Lehman.
Yeah. Okay. So fascinating time. We've got great stories about different investment properties that I assisted McKellar find and get under contract and close on, and a wild and wild west episode of what was going on right after Lehman. And so very fascinating time. And McKellar, after a while, got her real estate license, and now she's also a property manager. But today we're going to talk about McKellar as an investor.
Sounds great.
So McKellar, you know, you've done a lot of really fun, different acquisitions here. I mean, I could go on forever about some of our stories, how we roped them in at the very last minute and got them under contract. And so anyway, so what do you feel is your best investment that you've made in Chattanooga?
Well, Fairview is a huge one. I remember Fairview.
Yeah, Fairview was really awesome.
Fairview was incredible.
Yeah, so that's a good story. So kind of tell us a little bit about the story. Yeah.
So that one was a duplex at the time. And Grace called me, I think it was on a Monday, and said, hey, I have a property to show you that I think you're really going to like. It's over near UTC, and it's a duplex. I think it was 2 beds, 1 bath on the top and 2 beds, 1 bath on the bottom. We went and looked at it, and I started getting what I call like itchy. It's like an intuition that I really want the property and that it's a good investment. I mean, I knew the numbers worked. It was for sale for $55,000.
Yeah. All brick.
All brick.
Big lot. Corner lot.
It's in Fort Wood area.
Yeah.
And
nice homes next to it that were, you know, $300,000 to $400,000 homes.
So when Grace said, well, the initial investor has backed out and they're trying to close it by Friday, it was Monday. I was dying for it on Monday. She's like, can you find $55,000 by Friday? I was like, you betcha I can figure it out. And I moved things all around and we closed on Friday. And actually that was really interesting because it was a duplex, and then I guess that the neighbors, or maybe it was the investor who didn't go through it, told the city that it had been empty, and so it turned into a single, which was kind of scary. I had to change some things around, get rid of one of the kitchens, kind of, and then turned it into a single, but that made it a 5-bedroom, which actually rented for more.
Yeah.
I got that thing rented, I think, for $1,650, and I put $15,000 in. I was all in at $70,000. Renting it for $1,650.
Yeah, think now what are you renting it for?
Now I think it's under rented at $2,500.
Yeah, crazy. So,
I think it's under rented. I know.
Yeah.
And it's probably worth over $400,000.
Oh, I know it is.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. And it's all brick. And I remember even the insurance agent was like, oh, we can take some off on this one.
That was a good story. That was a really fun story. that was a, you know, buckle up and get it done.
It was.
And that's sometimes what you have to do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, that's what's so interesting about investing is that a lot of times you find these deals and you have to make a quick decision. And I know it's challenging sometimes to make a quick decision, but I think you're really good about that, trying to like analyze it, know what you can and can't do, and either walk away or continue. And I think that's a really key for a lot of investors.
I agree. I think that being able to make a decision fast is huge. And I think, you know, that is a struggle for a lot of women too.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, that is not a struggle for me. I like it. I look at the numbers, and if the numbers work, then I use my intuition. And I go in and, of course, look at the property, try to guesstimate what the repair costs are. But then I use my intuition, that itchy feeling or not. Like, I've been into a number of properties that I'll go in, the numbers totally work. I remember one out in Hurricane Creek in East Brainerd, and I went in. The numbers are great. It's a great area. And I wish it had worked, but I went in and this, I didn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm going to walk out.
Yeah.
And I have times when I just look at the neighborhood and don't even go into the property. Mm-hmm. So that,
well, I think that's really important. And that's one thing that I believe, that women investors, do use their intuition a little bit more than a lot of men do in real estate. So, it's a great aspect that women have if they can, you know, really get in there and feel confident about what they're doing. And you've done great coaching with women in the past, and I think that's a really good attribute that you have, is being able to support investing women who want to invest in real estate but don't have a lot under their belt for investing. So, and I think that's really cool that you can kind of use your masculine side and your feminine side to really balance out the numbers and the intuition, because real estate does have a lot of intuition about it. It really does, you know, and like, you know, and so it's very fascinating. So what was your worst story of investing?
Oh my gosh. So this was in Akron, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I bought this, it was another duplex, and that was a tough one. I mean, I think I lost $34,000. I'm just saying.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it wasn't a loss necessarily in the long term, but I miscalculated by $34,000. And so that's a big deal.
That's a big number.
So what happened was I went to look at it and it was so cheap. I mean, it was like $14,000 mm-hmm. for a duplex, which was great, except that when I looked at doing the rehab, what I thought was, you know, $15,000 rehab ended up being 34 over that, because I didn't bring my flashlight, which now I've got a flashlight in my car. We all have our phones, but going into the contractor that I went with didn't have a flashlight either. We couldn't see the basement. So, I mean, that was like, it was a newbie mistake.
Yeah.
And I basically, that basement was flooded.
Oh no.
And the sewage wasn't going to the road, so that had to get redone. Also, all the goodies were taken that we thought were there, like, you know, stuff for the HVAC and the heating.
Mm-hmm. And so they had stripped it.
They had stripped
the copper.
Oh yeah, it was terrible. So that was huge, and it was in an area that there was a lot of theft. It was near the new Children's Hospital, which was a great long-term investment, mm-hmm. and did ultimately sell it, and it was okay selling it. But in my mind, I really took a pretty good hit in terms of all the, you know,
right.
all the stuff that was taken from it, plus the flood, plus trying to get the sewage to go to the road. Mm-hmm. And that particular house had siding that was stolen, and it was off the side of the house, only up to where you could stand. So like somebody didn't even get a ladder to try to get more.
Wow.
It was aluminum siding.
Oh.
I don't even know what they could have sold it for.
Wow.
But
I love aluminum siding on houses. It's really durable versus the vinyl.
But you can like resell it. And yeah. So somebody came in and took it off as far as they could stand. And then my contractor said, hey, some people stopped by and told us that were warning us that once we put all the goodies back in, they were going to restrip it. So I had a really tough night that night. I was like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? What did I do? And then that morning I woke up and I called a alarm company and I said, what can we do? Like, we can put an external alarm on there and alarm. Mm-hmm. So I did that. It was a Saturday morning, I remember. And I said, let's just let it go. Let's just let it out. Let's just tell the whole neighborhood that there's a huge alarm system with an external alarm. Mm-hmm. And he let it off while I was on the phone for like 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And nothing was ever stolen since then.
Yeah.
And, you know, it worked out. But that was a tough one. You know? I will never not look at every area of the house again.
Well, yeah. That can sometimes be a rude awakening.
Yeah, I had.
So shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda. Oh,
shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know? Do you? What's
oh,
your,
you
what's
know
your,
some of the shoulda, coulda, woulda.
I know, but what's your number one shoulda, coulda, woulda?
Hey, there was a 5-plex in Hill City in Chattanooga that I missed. that I wish I had bought. And there's the $24,000 Highland Park that I should have bought. You remember those?
Yeah.
For me, it's more what I didn't buy than what I did. So I wish I had started my multifamily earlier. I did a bunch of singles, and it took me a while to jump up into multifamily. And so that's something I wish I had done. Also, I wish I had partnered with people more. I mean, I have partnered with a good number of people, but back in the day, I still felt like I didn't exactly know what I was doing and I was figuring it out. But I knew enough, and I wish I had just pulled in more outside money to buy more.
Yeah.
You know, if I wish I could, you know, tell that my 2008 self exactly what to do and just to buy it all.
The little Monopoly board.
I know, exactly. So it's more what I didn't buy versus what I did.
Yeah. So words of wisdom for investors, you know, what from what you've learned, what, you know, reflecting on where when you started, what, you know, what would you give a young investor right now in terms of words of wisdom, or in somebody that's getting ready to retire, you know, in their real estate investing?
So for a younger investor, I would say buy as soon as possible before you have kids and rent out the rooms and have your friends live in the rooms, or get a duplex where you rent out the other side and get one of those good 30-year loans, and then just keep doing it again until you have family with kids and you're not able to move like that anymore.
Right.
But that gives you your 30-year notes, and it gets you a whole portfolio easily. For people that are going to retire, I mean, there's a lot that you can do. It is a harder, you know, you probably need a property manager and some people to help you with those things. You can also hold notes for people that are investing.
Right.
If you're getting towards the end, there's still, like for me, I feel like one of the most important things is to buy money. So that if, like, for instance, the Fairview house,
right?
You know, I bought it at 55, put 15 in, I'm in at 70. I know it's already, if it was renting for $1,650, it's already worth around $165,000. So I've bought that money, that spread between $165,000 and $70,000.
So you're refinanced.
Yeah, you refinance it and pull it out and do it again.
Right, exactly.
And so if you can buy money, even if you're about to retire, it's not a bad way to go. Plus you have more time.
Yeah.
And part of it is taking the time to look and to not give up.
Well, and owner financing also is a great way for, you know, somebody that's in their 70s and 80s that, you know, they can still have cash flow, you know, get a pretty good down payment, and then owner finance for somebody, because a lot of times theirs might be deferred maintenance. They haven't done a lot. The rents aren't where they should be because they're, you know, they don't care because they've had cash flow and they don't owe anything on the property. So they don't realize how low the rents are versus what they could be. So, you know, that's another good avenue for people that are thinking about retiring. I know I've seen a lot of people where the husband passed away. He was actually kind of the investor. Now it's sitting in the wife's hands and she's overwhelmed and doesn't know what to do. And, you know, the first thing they should do is get a property manager and try to position it to do something, you know, that will not continue to deteriorate.
I think that sounds great. I mean, for somebody in that situation, owner financing is good too. If you sell it, then you have to take that tax hit.
Exactly.
So you're just getting your money on a monthly
over time.
Yeah. My mom actually does it. My stepdad passed away and my mom is now running my stepdad's stuff. And it's mostly owner financing type of things, holding the note.
Yeah.
And you get that income.
It's a residual. It's another easy residual income, and you don't have to worry about the tenants, the trash, and the toilets.
Correct.
It's a good exit strategy.
Because one thing is, even if you do have a property manager, you still have to manage the manager and all of that. But
hey, McKellar, it was great talking to you
today.
It's always so fun. McKellar is an awesome investor. If you ever need a coach, she's a great coach. And she's also a really good property manager. So
thanks, Grace.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.